I was working on these sermons back over the Christmas break while we were on vacation at my wife's parents' house. And I'm sitting in a Starbucks working on last week's sermon and then on this week's sermon. Last week's sermon, if you remember, was on baptism of Jesus. And I'm sitting there typing some thoughts, and then all of a sudden I realize that what's playing on Starbucks radio, you know, their little Starbucks produced CDs that they put out, is this song, "Let's Go Down in the River." And it's kind of an old spiritual. We've sung it here a few times. And it was kind of like, ooh, that's kind of creepy. And then about 10, 15 minutes later, I switch gears. I start working on this sermon on Jesus and Nicodemus, where Jesus says, you know, you must be born again. And I step back and I realize what's playing on the radio is Cat Stevens singing, "Oh, to be born again." I was like, oh, this is amazing. This is cool. So, and then I was trying to remember the name of the Cat Stevens song, and I got online and realized that he had converted to Islam. So hopefully this works better than that. As we start this series, I want to be honest about the fact that we are working with an assumption as we jump into this new series. We're working on the assumption that we all more or less agree that it's a good idea to have conversations with one another and with others about our faith. Maybe that's a scary assumption for you, but we're starting with that. That it's important for us to be able to talk to other people about our faith. Let me take it a step further. It's critical for us as followers of Jesus. It's critical for the future of our church to be able to share the hope we have in Jesus Christ. This is a sermon series about conversations. That's the title. There's going to be two things going on throughout this series. First, we're going to be preparing ourselves to have conversations with our neighbor. But at the same time, we're going to be sure that we are having the right conversations with Jesus in the first place. And we're going to do that by looking at some of the conversations that Jesus had with other people in the Bible. Today, we're starting by looking at the conversation between Jesus and Nicodemus. Now, Nicodemus is somebody that would have fit in pretty well in our culture, I think. He was a doer. He worked hard, and he had achieved success. You could say he was tenured, career track to the top of his field. Well-educated, almost certainly well-off. His name, the name Nicodemus, it actually means victor over the people. And as one of the Pharisees, as one of the ruling council, he was thoroughly rooted in a worldview that was all about earning it. Especially when it came to faith. Their faith system basically taught that if you do good and you do it enough, God will smile on you. God will be pleased. God will accept you. And when you don't do well enough, God pulls his favor away. How many of us approach God that way? We come to God with our own internal merit system. We add up our spiritual wins in this column, and we add up our fleshly losses in this column. And as long as there's more on this side of the ledger, then God smiles on us. Or maybe it happens for you this way. We sit down for a quiet moment and we think about, oh, maybe I should pray. But then something in your head reminds you of all the things that you've done wrong. God, didn't go to church last week. Looked at some stuff on the internet I shouldn't have. I haven't prayed in weeks. I can't pray now. I mean, God must be really ticked at me. Our friends over at Windsor Road Church, which is actually just across the cornfield over here, they did some research on this. And they found out that 43% of the people who live in this community, Champaign-Urbana, 43%, almost half, believe. They would say that, that if we obey, God will love us. If I do my best, God will accept us. Nearly half of us believe that we have to earn God's favor. This is a conversation that our community desperately needs. Because that's kind of the framework that Nicodemus had as he approaches Jesus. So let's jump in. Why at night? Why does Nicodemus come to Jesus at night? Could mean a lot of things. Maybe Nicodemus is trying to protect his reputation. He doesn't want anybody to think he's taking Jesus too seriously. I mean, what would people think if they hear that he's a Jesus freak? Anybody catch that? Okay, scratch that joke. I don't know. Do you ever feel that way? Do you ever worry? What would people think, really, if they knew that I took Jesus seriously? I feel that way. As a pastor, I hate it. I've mentioned this before. I hate it when people ask me, what do you do? I want them to get to know me first, because when they hear I'm a pastor, there's like this change that comes over them. Oh, I have been to church before. Are you willing for people to associate you first and foremost with Jesus? Well, maybe instead of that, maybe Nicodemus approaches Jesus because he needed a good, safe place to just have a conversation. Maybe life was too busy and there was, you know, always crowds around Jesus, and he just wanted to ask some questions. And he didn't want anybody to hear it. He just wanted to dig into some deep questions. What do you want from me, really? Because sometimes it takes a safe, quiet place to be able to have that conversation. Maybe it was that. Or maybe it's both of those, but there's something else going on too. John, who wrote this gospel, John uses the image of night, this imagery of darkness. He uses it consistently throughout the book of John, and he uses it to refer to, kind of symbolically, a lack of understanding. Every time John has something happening in the darkness, it goes side by side with somebody who's not quite getting it. Nicodemus sees, but he doesn't really see. He's on the right track, but he doesn't really get it. There's almost this tone of sarcasm in John's writing because of who Nicodemus is. He's a Pharisee. That means the separate ones. They're separate because they know God better than anybody. And Jesus even teases Nicodemus. You're the teacher of Israel, but you don't understand? Maybe what's really happening here is that Nicodemus is approaching Jesus, but keeping him at arm's length. Now, to be fair, I think we can acknowledge that Nicodemus has a degree of faith. Nicodemus' approach to Jesus is well-meaning, but it's theologically inadequate. Whenever we approach Jesus on the basis of whether we've been good enough or not, whenever we try to do good things because we hope it will make God accept us, or whenever we avoid God because we haven't been good enough, we may be well-intentioned, but we're really in the dark. We're missing something. Now, kind of a side note here, the fact that Nicodemus comes to Jesus says something. I think it shows curiosity. Let's recognize that Nicodemus is a pretty important guy. He's worked really hard to reach the place where he is. He thinks he's got everything figured out. But then he hears about this Jesus guy. One pastor put it this way: it'd be like working your whole life to make it into the Olympics as a swimmer. You've trained and trained, and you've beat your body, and you've sacrificed, and you've done everything you possibly can to be the best swimmer you can, and you make it. And you walk out onto the deck of the pool. You take your place and you look over and there's Michael Phelps. Nicodemus is curious. So here's my question. Does your life invite curiosity about your faith? Does your faith inform your life in such a way that, people look at you and they want to know what's going on there? If not, maybe you've got a little Nicodemus in you and you're holding Jesus at arm's length, keeping him at a safe distance. I mean, notice what Nicodemus says about Jesus. Surely you're a teacher who's come from God. No one could do what you do if God wasn't with them. This is the old Jesus is a nice guy philosophy. It reminds me of the time when Jesus asks his disciples, who do people say that I am? Well, some say that you're a prophet, a great teacher. You're a guy who's taught a really good way to live. It seems that Nicodemus had maybe a sneaky suspicion that just maybe there was more to Jesus than that. Nicodemus had these nice, neat little boxes in which he would allow Jesus to fit. This is what Jesus can be. Rabbi, teacher, maybe even a prophet. Nicodemus knew what to do with those. What if Jesus doesn't fit into the boxes? I think Nicodemus wondered, and that kept him up at night. So he went to find Jesus. And you know what Jesus does? Nicodemus doesn't even get to his question. He just says, we know you're a good teacher who has come from God. Jesus takes it instantly to a deeper level. Nicodemus is working on the level of the sensible, and Jesus takes it to the level of the spiritual. He says, you must be born again. You must be born anew. What? How does that work? Nicodemus doesn't get it, which is, frankly, kind of nice, because this is hard. Born again. It brings to mind, at least for me, all kind of negative connotations. I had a stranger in a mall ask me once, have you been born again? I've had others ask me, when were you born again? I've met people and said, I'm a pastor. Oh, great. When were you born again? Instantly brings to mind all these connotations of what kind of Christian that is. I mean, it's a loaded phrase in our culture. But you know what? Being born again, it's sort of like going to the doctor. It's the difference in getting a diagnosis of, well, you need these pills. Take these pills for a few days on the one hand. And on the other, you need a heart transplant. What Jesus is saying to Nicodemus is, you're dead. I see dead people. They're dead and they don't even know it. You're dead. And you don't even see that. The life you have right now, it's not ever going to get you where you want to go. You need a new life. Life from above. Jesus talks about the difference between the flesh and the spirit. Now, I want to point out, this is not the difference between our flesh and our soul kind of battling each other. That's not it. Jesus says that the flesh, we get our fleshly birth from our parents. When you're born, you've got the flesh. You've got that. What you need is to be born of the spirit. And that is a birth that comes from God. And when John says, you must be born again, it gives the impression that you either have it or you don't. And if you don't have it, if you don't have this birth from above, you're dead. And then John says, or Jesus says, we don't know where the wind blows. We don't know where the Spirit blows. I think what he's saying is, we don't ever know how or when that spiritual birth happens to somebody, but we can tell when it has happened. We can hear it. You can see in somebody's life when they have this new life. You can tell. You can see it. I see living people. That's what the world ought to say when they look at us, at the church. I see living people, and I want to know about that. Nicodemus' conversation with Jesus, it's really about one thing. It's about letting Jesus get closer than arm's length away. Nicodemus needed to get away to a safe, quiet place and ask Jesus what he really wanted. He needed to let Jesus bust open his paradigms and his preconceived notions. I think I know who you are, but what if there's more? I've got these nice, neat little boxes that I can fit you in, Jesus, but what if you're bigger than that? Some of us approach Jesus just like Nicodemus. We've got these safe, comfortable paradigms that we're willing to allow Jesus to fit into. And we have no problem saying, sure, Jesus, you're a good teacher. You're a nice moral guy. You set a great example. Yeah, sure, you came from God. It's easy to admit that. You know why? It's safe. It doesn't require anything. The truth is that our preconceived notions allow us to keep Jesus at arm's length. Frankly, that's as close as we want to let Jesus get anyway, most of the time. Here's some of the ways that I think we keep Jesus at arm's length. First is a theology of meritocracy. I thought I had invented a word, but then I looked it up and I hadn't. When we think we've got to earn God's favor, then our relationship with God is based solely on what we do. We keep Jesus at arm's length. It's the difference between do versus done. When we recognize that it's done, our new life has nothing to do with us. It comes from God. Then we recognize that the only thing required is relationship. And that's when we let Jesus closer than arm's length. Do versus done. The next way is that we keep Jesus at arm's length is through a theology of the intellect. We keep faith on the level of information. It's about what you know. Or is it? This is the difference between knowing and trusting. About 8 years ago, I interviewed at a church out in Virginia. And I'm walking down the hall with the pastor, the senior pastor, and we walk by some people, and he grabs one of them, and he says, "Scott, I want you to meet Doug. Doug has been a member of this church for 65 years. He served on session 6 times, which some of you know what that means. And then he said, Doug started his relationship with Jesus 2 years ago. It's the difference between knowing and trusting. Trusting requires something. It requires relationship. The third way that we keep Jesus at arm's length is through compartmentalization. We're willing to let Jesus have our Sunday mornings, maybe our Wednesday afternoons, but there's no way we're going to let him have our Friday and Saturday nights. We're going to talk about this more in a few weeks, but new life, life from above, is life that is shaped and guided by the Spirit every step of every day. Jesus wants all of us. He wants every part of our life. Again, the only way to do that is to take down the stiff arm. Some of us need to have the Nicodemus conversation with Jesus. We need to come maybe late at night, meet with Jesus, and ask him if he's up to something more than we think. Some of us need to have the conversation with Jesus where he says, "You must be born again, made new, recreated in my image. If anyone is in Christ, they are a new creation. The old is gone. It's done. The new has come." The invitation of Christ is the invitation to be made anew. And I think there are a lot of us who need to have the conversation with Jesus where he looks us in the eye and he says, "You can't earn my love. Stop trying and let me love you. Stop avoiding me when you haven't been good enough. Let your guard down. I love you just the way you are. I love you too much to let you stay the way you are. But I never, ever love you any less in any moment. May you have that conversation with Jesus.